You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Are friends with fantasy benefits. Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I don't want to make it like I don't know support the fans, so I'm happy about all that.
A man of the people. Be a man of the people, Ben Brennis.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
You know, who's hosting this podcast? Me or you guys, alright? I could just shut this shit down right now.
Just edit it all out and it never happened.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
That might be more talk on John Gray than like his family has had this offseason. That was pretty all inclusive. We've got him covered.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Brennis. I'm joined by Chuck Anderson and Evan Peterson. How are you doing, Chuck?
I am phenomenal. Just signed up for my first NFBC draft, put in my KDS, and waiting to see when I start.
Well, good luck with that. Evan, how's everything going with you? I understand that you're doing a draft as we speak, so I can understand if you're somewhat distracted.
Literally right now as we speak, but no, I'm at the wheel. I just made my pick, so I'm ready to focus and talk some baseball.
Yeah, well, I do know that we had a couple of topics that we wanted to talk about, but why don't we give our listeners our Twitter handles, and then we can jump right in. So, Evan, what's your Twitter handle?
At EasyEv3 on Twitter. Just hanging out, you know, chilling, killing. Come talk ball.
You doing okay after last week?
I did a lot of drinking. I don't know if you saw any of my outbursts, but it was bad, and we're not here to talk about those things. It's only baseball.
Fair enough. And Chuck, where can you be reached on Twitter?
I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter, which fortunately for me, more and more over time, people ask me questions and get topics started, and been getting a lot of feedback. I saw that I'd like to thank our listeners because Friends with Fantasy Benefits has moved well within the top 10 of the overall sports category for on iTunes these days, which we really appreciate. So thanks to our listeners. We'll keep trying to give you good content.
And I agree with all that. I don't want to make it like I don't support the fans, so I'm happy about all that.
A man of the people. Be a man of the people, Ben Brennis.
Sorry. I can be reached at bbrennisfwfb. Guess I'm just a little too excited to talk John Gray here. I'm sorry, guys. I was just trying to hold my excitement in. I don't know. I'm personally a massive fan of John Gray. I know we had talked a little bit about this in our pre-show preview last week, and we had talked a little bit about him during the week. But what are your thoughts exactly coming into this season in terms of how John Gray should be handled in drafts, Evan?
Well, yeah, and this is the thing of hanging out and doing so many podcasts with you guys is we have so many conversations that don't even make it to the air, and it's just a bunch of nerds sitting around talking baseball. And so we were talking John Gray and how people see that he plays for the Rockies and they want to run for the hills, and First off, Gray likes pitching in the NL West. He picks on the Padres, but he has over a 10.5 K per nine against, you know, the entire division. And he likes Coors too. 235, 291, 383 triple slash at home. All those numbers were worse on the road. Walk percentage was 5 percentage points worse on the road. And he... Last year, the easy analysis on him was, well, you're only going to have a guy that you can only start on the road, but 7 of his 16 quality starts came at home, which is a far cry from that. And I think he's just being underdrafted this year, and I'm looking to get a hold of him where I can.
And what about you, Chuck?
Well, you know, you take an age 25 pitcher, you know, he's coming off his first full season in the bigs, but, you know, his WHIP went down. .35 his WHIP went down. His strikeouts per nine went up one. He went from 8.9 to 9.9. That looks really good. His ERA went down from it started at 5.53 his age 23 season in 2015. Last year it was 4.61, but his FIP last year was 3.6, which, you know, is pretty good. I do know from owning him last year that he was pretty streaky last year within those numbers. There was he did have an uptick late in the season, but he had a 5-6-7 start stretch that wasn't very good before that. And right when it looked like he was going to be surging. So, and you guys didn't know this, but there was a long debate last year on our Monday podcast that we had last year, on our Thursday podcast, excuse me, about if people could pitch effectively in Colorado or if they could not. And I was the big bolster to say that if you put the right pitchers in Colorado, they will be startable pitchers in fantasy baseball. And John Gray was one of the guys I championed for that. So I'm happy that we're having this discussion. I think you got to expect, you know, 9.9 Ks for nine. That pitchers like that don't grow on trees. And I think he's somebody that's well worth a gamble in the middle tier for pitching.
Yeah, I'm a big strikeout whore. I've been very adamant about that for many years, since I've been with Friends of Fantasy Benefits when I started 2 years ago, that I just love guys who get a ton of Ks. And I was a big fan of Gray, considering how little I like Rockies pitchers overall. I see how much immense talent this guy has, and I saw the improvements that he was able to make last year, and I saw what he's able to do when he's able to put everything together. You could see that those walks per nine could go down a little bit, but as long as he keeps doing what he's able to do and getting strikeouts and improving, those numbers could easily fix. You could easily see that ground ball rate maybe climb closer to 50% from the 43.5 that it is. You could see the left on base potentially go a little bit higher, and I obviously understand that that can change from year to year, and that's extremely fluky, basically, overall. As long as he gets rid of those, or cuts down on the walks per nine, you could easily see him getting more strikeouts per nine, depending on how he progresses with all of his pitches, how he gets more comfortable in the bigs, everything like that. You could easily see his ERA actually come a little bit closer to what the FIP is overall as a result of that as well. Chuck, is there anything that would make you worried at any point during the year that he could end up regressing a little bit because of the ballpark? Or do you think that this is something that he's going to be able to overcome, and he's going to be able to teach some of the other young pitchers that could come up how to be able to overcome it because he's been able to?
Well, I just think it's part of it. I've always said is a mindset. You don't have to go out there trying to put up Cy Young numbers in Colorado. I mean, look at the offense that you have behind him. Look at how highly the players are picked in fantasy drafts. The point of going out in Colorado would be if I can pitch close to a quality start, you know, worst case scenario, if I'm giving up 4 runs in 7 innings, you know, 3 runs in 6 2/3, you know, et cetera, you're probably going to win most of those games because you have an immense offense behind you and you have pitchers coming in who are even less familiar with the idea of, of pitching in Coors and the factors thereof. You know, last year there was also a statement that last year what they started doing is they started sending their pitchers back to have bullpen sessions in Colorado when they were on the road. They wanted the pitchers that were going to start the next road trip, they wanted their bullpen sessions to be in Colorado instead of having their bullpen sessions on the road. So they're experimenting and they're trying to come up with different ways for them to deal with it. My take this year is where you're looking at John Gray going in drafts, most of the drafts that we're in, the big drafts, you know, 14 teams and above, you're going to have to stroll them out there and take your chances because you, at least you know you have that baseline strikeout capabilities that he has, and you're going to have to go from there.
What are your thoughts on this, Evan?
Well, you were talking about how, you know, regression that might come from the ballpark or whatnot. You look at the ground ball percentage at Coors, which was 5% higher than what he saw on the road. I mean, that makes sense. You keep the ball on the ground in Coors and you don't watch it go over the fence. But I think it's a really interesting area that he's going in drafts. And I don't know how much higher I feel comfortable throwing him, as I would take him over guys like Urias, Lackey, probably Raisel Iglesias. But I mean, you're getting into Kevin Gausman, Jameson Taillon, Steven Matz territory. And those are some names that I really like. So I'm just not sure where I'm going to be able to draw the line on Gray this year. If you guys want to help me out there.
Yeah, for me, obviously, like I've said, I'm a big fan of John Gray, and if he was in a different ballpark, I'd love him like so much more, but I'm just such a big fan of him considering where he is, in terms of the ballpark and everything now. Like, in terms of like where he's being drafted and everything, I feel like he's just going so late, and I feel like he's just better than the options that are ahead of him. Like Steven Matz, I can understand the talent, but the dude just can't stay healthy. Outside of that, I don't think any of the other pitchers that are just slightly ahead of him are any better. I used to be a big Marcus Stroman fan, but he just doesn't get enough strikeouts. That offense became a little weaker with Edwin Encarnacion leaving and Saunders leaving, and Brett Cecil leaving that bullpen. So the overall pitching staff in Toronto probably will feel a little bit of regression in terms of some of the numbers that they've been used to in terms of how much the offense scores and how much the back end of the bullpen gives up. But I can't see any players ahead of him up until maybe Dallas Keuchel or Tanner Roark that I wouldn't feel comfortable taking him over. I could easily take him in the top 35 and not really worry about it at all. What about you, Chuck?
I think you have to ask yourself the question of if you can protect your whip with the rest of your staff. I don't think I would want John Gray with a lot of higher whip players, you know, including a guy we were talking about off air. You know, Yu Darvish, for all the strikeouts, has never been a good whip pitcher. So if you're a believer like I am, that you can kind of protect against one or two guys that are likely to have a higher whip, then that moves him up that food chain that we were just talking about. I agree with you. I would much rather have Gray than Matz, but some of the other names that he mentioned around Matz, it gets tricky to take him over those guys. I could take him over Lackey as well, but a lot of the other guys with upside, I couldn't take him over Gausman, etc. and so forth, just because I do think I'd like to see just one more little half step of growth before I got into that area with a pitcher who's still had a 1.26 whip last year. And I don't trust the Rockies as much as everyone else seems to about them being playoff contenders this year already, because I don't trust the rest of the staff maybe as much as some other people do. So, you know, I think the 10 wins are a little bit indicative of what he's likely to get again this year. And so I don't think there's a lot of win upside there. So even though I like him where he's getting taken, I'm not sure I like him a whole lot more than a bunch of the players in front of him.
Yeah, I can understand that. I'm not sure if there's a lot more than 10 wins in his 2017 season. I could see an uptick in quality starts just because I could see him improving. I could see his quality starts maybe going from 16 to 20. not a massive jump, because until he cuts down those walks, it's still going to be very tough for him to be able to really improve overall. But he has the ability, as long as he keeps making those minor progressions, that he is able to cut back on the walks. And I'm also in Chuck's boat that I'm not a big fan of the Rockies overall. I'm not sold on them being playoff contenders. I don't think they have enough decent starting pitching to be able to help them overcome the ability to give up 5 runs a game. And that's what's going to happen when you play 81 games at home and your best pitcher is giving up roughly 5 runs per game as a result of that. Now, it's tough to say exactly who's going to do well at home this year and who's not, because you saw some pitchers do better at home in the past in Colorado than they have on the road. And then, you know, you've seen more of it is vice versa. But you do see the occasional pitcher who does have more luck come in when he is pitching in Colorado. And it just depends on how the rest of the team around him progresses. Evan, do you really see more than 10 wins or a slight uptake in the quality starts, just like Chuck and I do?
Yeah, I mean, I hate wins as a stat because there's so much that goes into it that is kind of out of the pitcher's control. But as far as quality starts, I think he's got the ability to go, you know, if he can keep the walks down, which, you know, obviously that's what's going to extend a lot of at-bats is walks and, you know, strikeouts, because you got to throw at least 3 pitches or 4 pitches. But I think he does have the ability to go an easy 6 innings. And as long as he can keep the ball in the park, I think there is an uptick in quality starts for him.
Yeah, I agree. Do you guys have anything else to add on John Gray before we move on? Either one of you.
That might be more talk on John Gray than like his family has had this offseason. That was pretty all inclusive. We've got him covered.
Yeah, the fact that we probably spent 13 minutes talking about John Gray and being in Colorado, considering that he's like number like 35th to 40th guy off most playoff most draft rosters is kind of impressive overall. So.
It is. And later on, we'll talk about another JON pitcher. So there you go. It's a JON show.
Exactly. Why don't we move into one of our next sections? And that's going to be talking about some players that we, or some teams overall that had players that we felt were a little overrated and underrated. And when we say that, like, Chuck, basically you had stated that you felt a couple players from the Cubs were basically underrated in terms of their overall draft value. So why don't you point out a couple of those players and we can go into a debate, because I do know that one of them we will get into a debate on.
Matter of fact, I barely mentioned him. I just have his number. As the list of players that I think are underdrafted for the Cubs, I do think Chris Bryant is a bit underdrafted, but not debatable because it's in Cadillac land, but he's going at number 3 overall. Anthony Rizzo, I discussed on the First Base podcast last week with Darius and with our man Justin. His average draft position is 13, which he got better last year, so I don't see that. Then JON Lester instead of JON Gray. He's going at 35. I just think with consistency that we have to think John Lester is actually being a little underdrafted this year when you look at how incredibly consistent he's been over the last 5 or 6 years. Then Wilson Contreras is going at pick number 90. I think with his outfield eligibility and when you look at how good he was in AA and AAA, I think I'm surprised that he's not getting more of a World Series boost. And a guy that we've talked about, I think, a little bit on other shows is Addison Russell, just 23 years old, going at pick number 134. When we get into depth on him, I will point out, you know, a number of good trends in his statistics, including the fact that 23-year-old hitting 21 home runs, having 95 RBIs, you know, in a really good lineup is pretty strong. So those are some of the guys that I feel are being underdrafted as Cubs, which again shocks me because they dominated Major League Baseball last year.
Evan, anything to add on some of these Cubs players by any chance?
No, I mean, I think it's interesting if you want to talk about Bryant being overdrafted, underdrafted. It's your first round pick. I mean, it's just a matter of where somebody's going to hop up and take him. And I don't see any, I don't think Chris Bryant should fall any further than probably the sixth pick overall. Personally, I don't know how you guys feel about that, but I'm not going to argue with if he goes three or five. I mean, that, who cares?
I mean, for me, like, the reason that Chuck and I had gone into this conversation during the week was mainly because he had stated that there's no way that Bryant should ever go later than three. And I, while I can understand that and I can support that, I can also support the fact that I could easily see Altuve or Paul Goldschmidt being taken above him due to the fact of some of the skills that they possess in at the positions that they do. And that, it's not like it's impossible for them to be able to still maximize the amount of value that they provide. Now, I do understand that Bryant replaced a ton of the value that he actually had last year. And you don't see that very often. It's not like you draft Mike Trout first overall and he just consistently finishes first. It's that he's just consistently a top-tier player whenever you take him. You know, look at what happened last year. A lot of players took Clayton Kershaw in the first round, and when he pitched, he was first round value. He was out for like 2 months, and he still finished. He was still ahead of most pitchers on the player radar outside of Max Scherzer, which was extremely valuable considering that he was out for that amount of time. But I could easily get behind the argument, like I was saying, that, you know, Goldschmidt could easily have more power and still do 30 steals with the batting average if that team improves at all, or that Altuve has the capability of getting 20 home runs and 50 steals with a .333 average. So there's the ways that I feel that Bryant necessarily doesn't have to be a top three pick, but that he's able to be top five, and I know that's nitpicking, but I can't. It's easy to say that someone's able to be that high and that he should always be that high because there's other players in that spot. It's not, if it was a much later, if it was the back end of the first, then it would be a bigger discussion. Like with Anthony Rizzo, I feel that Chuck is dead on that he's being a little bit underrated considering. And last year he didn't have as great of a season because he didn't have as many steals as the year before, but I feel that the Cubs overall just didn't have as many steals because their offense had just been so much better last year that they didn't need to try to run because they were still able to get everyone in. And I felt like Madden just kind of took a little bit off of the pressure off of the stolen bases. Chuck, why don't you talk about one of the other teams that you felt was being a little bit underdrafted?
Actually, I was going to go to the team that I think was being overdrafted
because
that's
too.
The one that
you
I looked
that.
At more. All right. And that would be the Chicago White Sox. And it's interesting because I read across the town from the team that I think is getting underdrafted, but also the fact that the White Sox seem to be pretty much tearing all of their assets down. So I have a question in the back of my mind about where all these players are going to end up at the end of the season, which I think is a really important point of reference for the hitters, because the hitters could end up in a much more difficult place to hit home runs in, and the pitchers could end up in, you know, could end up conceivably in Colorado. Now, the pitchers probably likely to go to a place that's easier to pitch in than the cell, as it's been known for a lot of its existence in Chicago. But White Sox players that I feel are getting overdrafted. I do feel that Jose Abreu is slightly overdrafted at 62. I think Todd Frazier is getting vastly overdrafted at 72. Jose Quintana is going at pick 107. I like a bunch of the players better than him. Like I said, we really don't have any idea where he's going to end up. And you're talking about a guy who's, you know, only 7.8 Ks per nine, and his career high is only 13 wins. His FIP was up last year, you know, and he really, you know, he had a 294 BABIP allowed last year, which isn't great either. And then I also want to mention that their closer, David Robertson, is going at pick 122, which I learned a valuable lesson last year about closers. That's that teams that are in contention now like to pick up a closer that they know can be their setup guy. And so when you put the trade veil up over the top of a team like the White Sox that are likely to be dreadful this year, they're starting Charlie Tilson in center field. That means you're basically throwing in the towel when you're expecting to do that.
Don't
badmouth Charlie Tilson. You watch yourself.
So my point being is that David Robertson by the All-Star break could easily be the setup man for the LA Dodgers, could easily be a setup man for any team that's in contention. You know, that's you're going to see people follow a bit of a blueprint like the Indians did and stocking up on their bullpen when they think they're going to make the postseason. And the last thing you want to do, in my opinion, is to be relying on a closer who's suddenly a setup man. So I think there's a lot to, you know, I have a lot of stats on Todd Frazier as well. I really didn't like he struck out almost 25% of the time last year. You know, he had an unsustainable, in my opinion, 18.2% home run to fly ball percentage. That was up 5% over last year. His line drive percentage was down 6%. And that, you know, helped add to the fact that he had an incredibly low BABIP. So despite the fact that Justin Mason is all in on Todd Frazier this year, I'm just afraid of the whole White Sox situation. Like, I think they could tear it right down to the ground. Right down to ground zero by the end of the year.
I mean, to be fair, there's also been a lot of talk that David Robertson could also go to the Nationals and be their closer. And I think that his value would go up if that's the case. I don't think he's that great of a closer overall, but I still think that would still give him a good boost in value if he were to go. That's the one situation where he could really move over to, that he could still remain as the closer that I've actually heard of that a team is looking to acquire. Because as far as I know, there's only about five bullpens that the teams aren't really entirely sure about the closer, and they don't seem that they're entirely sold on Blake Treinen or Sean Kelly as their closer. So,
yeah, I mean, even the one thing is, even if he's in a good situation, we should remember that his WHIP soared last year, up over 1.4, I believe.
Yes.
Is a number that I saw, which is a huge red flag for any closer, let alone one that right now is pitching on a really bad team.
Evan, what are your thoughts on the White Sox?
Well, I was kind of getting lost in Todd Frazier while you guys were chatting about David Robertson. I think the one thing I will say really quick about Robertson is I understand exactly what Chuck is talking about acquiring closers to fill setup roles. I think the one thing that doesn't get factored into that is there's going to be injuries that happen, and that trade could happen at any time. So, I mean, you got to keep that in mind as well, that he may as well, you know, find a spot in the ninth inning somewhere after somebody blows a UCL. But as far as Frazier's concerned, I know that the BABIP issue is well noted for him. I don't know how you can sustain a 230 BABIP at the cell, and especially when his OPS on balls that were not hit on the ground was exactly the same. I don't understand why his batting average dipped so much, and I think there's going to be regression, and I don't know that it's going to be massive that we can expect him to go back to hitting 275 or anything crazy like that. But if he can hit 250, 255, like even he did back in 2015, I mean, that's a step in the right direction that's going to put Frazier back. Yeah, and I'm just really excited to have Todd Frazier on my team because I think he can go back to being, you know, 2015 Todd Frazier and being not so much 2016 Todd Frazier, which I think is more valuable.
Yeah, I agree with that. That 2015 Todd Frazier is just such a benefit. Now, obviously, with the team around him, it makes it a little tougher because it puts a little more onus on him. But as we've talked about in the podcast last week, there are some players on that team that I still think give the team offensive power in Abreu and Melky Cabrera that they don't have to necessarily just try to sell out to like do everything. I think he's able to bring cut down that strikeout rate just a little bit. I think that the park adjustment and the league adjustment just overall for him was just a little longer than it had been expected, but I think that Todd Frazier is a good enough hitter to be able to overcome it. In terms of the overdrafted players, I still think that Jose Abreu is considered overdrafted by my standards for the fact that I have him ranked as the 12th overall first baseman coming into this year. And it's just tough because right now he's ranked as the 8th overall first baseman on NFBC. And I do understand that these teams, there's more teams in the NFBC drafts and the styles are a little different than the regular standard 10-team league. But even so, I still have other first basemen ahead of him that are at least 40 spots different in the NFBC average draft position. So for me, in that aspect, he's going way higher than I would expect him to go. Because I don't have, I like Abreu, but I think he's going to be more closer to last year's stats and everything than he is going to be any of the other seasons. And he is a little bit older. I believe he's entering his age 30 season, so it's not like it's inconceivable that he just doesn't make any improvements from last year and he just keeps that stat line, which is still solid, just not exactly a top 63 pick, in my opinion. I feel like you'd be able to get him a little bit later rather than jump up. Evan, are there any teams that you want to talk about in terms of being overrated or underrated?
I mean, I know that the Astros are catching a ton of helium because their lineup is bonkers good. But, I mean, you look at what they did last year. They scored 724 runs, which was 2 more than the Twins and, you know, less than 10 more than the Reds, who weren't exactly offensive juggernauts. But you kind of scan this lineup from top to bottom, just going down roster resource with Springer, Altuve, Correa, Beltran, McCann, Bregman, Reddick, Gurriel, and Aoki. Regardless of how you feel about the last 2 or 3 names on that list, the top 6 is ridiculous. And it's one of those things that I do believe in Jose Altuve as a high first-round pick. I do believe in Carlos Correa, probably at the beginning of that shortstop run we were talking about last week. Brian McCann and Evan Gattis I'm high on, and not just because they once played for the Atlanta Braves. And I'm also a big George Springer guy. So, I mean, even though I understand he kind of tailed off in the second half, but he's a guy that I'm definitely behind. Their bullpen is disgusting. Giles and Gregerson are, you know, just great guys that I think are going to lock up a lot of wins for this rotation, which, hey, they have Charlie Morton, so you know they're going to be good. And I mean, I'm a Lance McCullers apologist. I'm one of those guys. Colin McHugh I like as well. Dallas Keuchel I don't hate as much as everybody does. So I think there's lots of fantasy goodness on the Houston Astros, and they should go even higher than they already are.
What are your thoughts on the Astros, Chuck?
Well, there's a lot to like in their lineup. That's for sure. There's a ton of upside in most of their offensive players. I do think, you know, how McCann and Beltran age / adjust is going to be important to the depth of the lineup. But there's, when you're talking about guys that have as much power upside and often speed upside, they're going to be very popular players in drafts. Then you add the fact that, you know, their bits and pieces have been highly touted minor league players like Bregman and AJ Reed. And I certainly can see exactly where Evan's point is coming from. Now, you know, Springer's going at number 32 off the board, which, you know, we've seen flashes of him being much better than that. And we've had certain stretches of the season where we thought, boy, he should be playing better than he is playing. He says they're catching a certain amount of helium and he doesn't feel like there's quite enough. So it's going to be really interesting. I mean, Bregman is going at number 91 overall. So he's going, you know, he's going into the top 100 for sure. So, you know, I think it's debatable exactly if I think they're going about right or a little bit too low, but I don't feel like anybody is getting criminally underdrafted as far as an Astro is concerned.
Besides Charlie Morton.
Well, Charlie Morton is getting underdrafted. I mean, you know, because I have a feeling that not everyone is – he hasn't probably been drafted in all NFBC leagues that go 750 players deep. So, and I think he deserves a token pick, like around player number 743, right in there. That's about where he deserves to go.
Yeah, for me, I can support a lot of those players. I don't know if I can really support Breckman as being a top 100 player, considering that I would like to see him do it for more than the amount of time that he's been in the bigs. But for me, you know, I'm a big George Springer fan. I'm a big Carlos Correa fan. I'm probably higher on Keuchel than most, just because I'm a big proponent of thinking that he's able to actually be the type of player he was more so 2 years ago. And I understand there was a lot of things that went into his 2015 season with all the college strikes and everything. But I do think that with how he's able to play the game and everything, I think that he's going to be able to do well. And I'm basically like Evan, in which I absolutely love Lance McCullers. In terms of the overall pitching staff, I think that there will be some improvements just in how the team overall does, because I think that offense will get a little better as the players are up. I think that Gurriel will have a decent season. I will see what AJ Reed's able to do. Altuve is obviously a monster. And we talked about him a little bit when we talked about with the Cubs, that I could easily see him going third overall in some teams. And if he's being drafted fourth or fifth or sixth, and you know, then great if you're able to get him that late, because he's a fantastic player. There's just a lot of talent overall in this lineup, so I can definitely get behind a lot of the players that are being underdrafted. The only one who I'm considering not really looking at is Alex Bregman, and I do think that he's going to be fantastic. So,
well, I'd like to use this forum to bring up a player debate I heard the other day. I heard on a different podcast somebody say that they would much prefer Carlos Beltran over Matt Holliday, who are kind of interesting, displaced, still outfield eligible, both DH players. So I wonder if you guys had an opinion on if you'd rather have Holliday or if you'd rather have Beltran.
I'd probably go Matt Holliday just on first instinct.
I can't possibly go Holliday just because his last couple seasons just haven't been that good. At least Beltran has been relatively healthy because they haven't had him playing the field as much, and I feel that he's able to be consistent with putting up those numbers. Now, with that team, there are a lot of players that could easily take over the DH role, so he could get more time off, which could be a benefit to him in terms of how healthy he stays, but it could hurt his counting stats as a result. But I think that Beltran has the better chance of having a better season, and I don't think it's really that close. Just because Holiday, I can't even expect Holiday to stay healthy for more than 120 games this year. At least Beltran, I expect to play that many.
That's very interesting, because I thought it was close, and I thought it was close enough where I thought Yankee Stadium would make the difference. Even though, of course, Matt Holliday is a right-handed hitter, so that eliminates some of the advantages. Of course, Carlos Beltran, you know, being a switch hitter, he's going to have a lot of his at bats from the left side. And, you know, that takes the boxes, the short left field boxes out of play for him in Houston as well. So I just thought they were eerily similar players, both in the point of their career and how they're going to be used, and moving teams to, you know, good offensive settings. So I thought that was a very interesting comparison that I hadn't made before I heard it the other day.
Yeah, and also real quick, you want to talk about playing 120 games. I mean, in 2014 and 2015, Beltran played 109 and 133 games respectively. So it's not like recently he's been a bastion of health, and Matt Holliday is 2 years younger than him. So even though you're talking about saving him and whatnot, I mean, that's still, you know, age and mileage and oldness.
I was originally shocked. I originally had the opposite opinion of Ben. I originally said, well, I think I would rather have Matt Holliday. Just
well, you
because,
were on the right side. Yeah.
Yeah. Just
smart man.
Well, Evan, just because.
Evan, if you want, we could have a regular fist fight outside. We could duke it out that way. I don't mind.
3:30 like, by the jungle gym, brother. Let's go.
It feels like Beltran being in the American League has been able to DH and take time off. And Matt Holliday being in the National League, you know, they dabbled with him at first base, which I hear a lot of people saying he's going to play some first this year in New York, but he didn't look very good when he played it in St. Louis. And I got to talk to our man, Matt Thompson, our Cardinal insider, because before when I've talked to him about it, he doesn't seem to think that Matt Holliday is an option at first base. So anyway, the point being is that now Holliday, this is the first time he's going to be able to DH to try and stay on the field. Beltran has been able to try and DH to stay on the field, and it still by and large hasn't happened as much as we'd like. So that's what gives the nod to me on Holliday.
I mean, for me personally, I've heard Matt talk about Holliday playing first, and they basically had given him the option to play first in St. Louis because they had liked him more than Matt Adams. And if he was willing to play there and if they thought he was decent enough, he would still be in St. Louis probably playing first base for them this year. So there's clearly not enough love from him at first, nor the organization in the St. Louis Cardinals who had him for many, many years, that he's capable of playing that. So I honestly just can't really see him doing it more than a stopgap, the occasional maybe like once a week guy if necessary, because I just can't see the Yankees willing to put that burden on the overall defense and on Matt Holliday, basically, if he's not that happy with the position. And Evan, in terms of the health for Beltran, I totally agree that he hasn't been a bastion of health. I just get more worried with Holliday, because the fact that I can't see that the injuries that will keep him out are still going to allow him to play. And not that I think that Beltran will be able to stay healthier for the entire season. I just feel that I'm able to rely on him being a little healthier, given the other options that they have, that if he has a minor tweak here or there, they're able to sit him down. They have options that can go play DH, go and fill in for him. And I don't see that the Yankees have as much talent to be able to overcome not being able to play Holliday, even though they probably would be better off playing some of their young guys. So that's the only reason I say that.
Well, Justin Mason is literally jumping in his shoes right now. What about his man, Chris Carter? The big sleepy, they call him. Big sleepy, they call him in Milwaukee.
He's going to be sleeping this entire season because he's not getting an MLB contract.
He got a $3 million contract from the Yankees. No, come on now. No one's more surprised than me. I told Justin I didn't think he'd land on a team at all. So, you know, I'm actually just being kind of facetious with you. But I think it's kind of similar, more similar situations than you're painting it, because Holliday's got some young players around him and behind him, but you don't know exactly how good they're going to be. Just like Beltran, you know, how many at-bats does A.J. Reed need? We're not exactly sure, you know. So I think the situation's more similar than you're painting it. So I'm landing on with Evan on this argument.
The right side.
No, yeah. It's the wrong side. It's whatever. I'm letting you get your moment. All right? You know, who's hosting this podcast? Me or you guys? All right? I could just shut this shit down right now.
Just edit it all out and it never happens.
Just edit it all out. Yeah, you guys basically go quiet for 45 minutes and it's just me talking. So, yeah, that's how this podcast could go.
Absolutely.
Well, what do you think? You think we have time to talk about the Braves, or should we save that for another time?
I think we have time to talk about the Braves, and I think we have time to talk about any team that Evan thinks is being overdrafted if he actually has any.
I didn't even want to talk about the Braves, but I did see that their over under win total was 71.5. And if I was a gambling man, wink, I might put some dollars down on that one.
I would take the over.
Yeah, absolutely. They were so much better in the second half. Thing.
I was like, how do they give them this amount of wins? I was like, they're nuts.
Dollar bills. Chuck, talk to me about my Braves. Make me feel good.
Well, I think they're getting vastly underdrafted overall. I don't know if you guys believe in this per se, but supposedly Matt Kemp is in very similar shape as he was before Rihanna, which I guess the Rihanna breakup was hard on him, and that's hard for any man to blame him for. But I also think that Ender Inciarte is a wonderful bounce back candidate at the top of that lineup. I fully you know, everybody seems to believe in Dansby Swanson more than I do. Freddie Freeman seems like he's, you know, become a hell of a player. The power outburst last year. I think there's some trepidation about Braves because we don't know what their new park is going to be like, but I think we have to assume that the park is going to be neutral. And there's a good chance that it's going to be quite a bit better than neutral. So I just feel like as a generality, you know, you look at their draft numbers, you know, you got a guy like Ender Inciarte that everybody liked last year. Now he's going off the board at pick 192. You know, everyone says they like Dansby Swanson. Well, he's not going until pick 181. Granted, that's because of the depth at shortstop, to a large extent. I get that. Now, you know, to bring in some current events, you know, it looks like they brought aboard Brandon Phillips, who I'm not especially excited about, but does seem to make some sense for a team that appears to really be trying to win. They're not a team that is throwing in the towel. I would gladly take the over on the 71.5 wins and feel pretty confident about it. So I think, Evan, I think your Braves are being vastly underdrafted.
Ben, I mean, everybody kind of knows where I'm at. I have my own theory on Brandon Phillips, which I absolutely love, and I'm kind of curious. I've been saying that I think the two spot in the lineup is Dansby's spot, pretty much guaranteed. I don't know if they would experiment with putting Phillips in at the two spot, since he is a right-handed hitter. I think putting Dansby in front of Freddie would get him better pitches to hit, and he won't see as much garbage. Batting, you know, fifth, sixth, down around Adonis Garcia territory. But yeah, there's a lot to like on this team if your name isn't Tyler Flowers.
Who?
It's everybody's sentiment exactly. But
Ender, to be fair, he's one of the best pitch framers in the entire business. I will give him that.
Which is great, and I hope he can catch Bartolo's fastballs and R.A. Dickey's knuckleballs, and oh my God, I threw up in my mouth because this rotation is going to be awful. But I he's think there's
catch, a... He's going to catch a lot of balls, don't you worry.
But yeah, there's a lot to like for the Braves, and I think they're going to be fantastic if everybody can stay semi-healthy.
Yeah, I'm a Mets fan. And I still like players that are on the Braves because I think that there's a lot of potential, like Ender Inciarte. I think that he's going to absolutely murder that value as long as he's able to stay healthy. And obviously that's a big question, but I do think that he has the ability to be able to put up close top 100 value if he is able to stay healthy, given his skill set. Continue, sorry.
No, I was just going to hop in real quick. I mean, he scored 85 runs last year, and he only played like 130 games. And I think he can, you know, definitely do that. Just don't expect any home runs from him. But he's a great source of speed late.
Yeah, I think ever since this offense got Matt Kemp, they saw that offensive gear in all of their heads kind of turn it itself on. And I think that's a massive benefit for a team that does have a lot of young players. You saw Freddie Freeman come into his own. You have Swanson, who's going to be here. You have Brandon Phillips, who's here for a year before Ozzie Albies comes up. But it allows him to refine himself in AAA. You got Inciarte. You have other players on this team who who will be able to grow overall as players, that it will be a benefit to them. And it's like, personally, this was a discussion earlier today that that Justin Mason is not a big Dansby Swanson fan because of what his skill set translates from real life into fantasy. And I can understand that, but I can also see how if this offense keeps clicking to the point where if he hits over 300, he's able to score 85-plus runs. He'll have his RBIs. He'll still have 10 to 15 home runs, and he'll get some stolen bases. I think that he's still going to be able to provide a decent fantasy shortstop, or at least a middle infielder in certain leagues, that to the point where it's just it still gives you good value overall, that I think that there's players that are just severely underrated in this offense.
And how about the one guy we haven't talked about yet? This will probably really bring a smile to Evan's face in case I'm right. But I've heard a number of other podcasts, and I agreed because I owned him at the end of last year. Former Orioles closer Jim Johnson, his stuff really came back towards the end of last year. I'm really curious to hear Evan's thoughts on that. I think Jim Johnson as an end game closer is being vastly underrated.
I mean, we've seen the Jim Johnson experiment before, and we still have, you know, the guys that I really like in the bullpen as far as, like, Vizcaino's concerned or whatnot. But I think Jim Johnson's another guy they could, you know, give some closer experience or some closing opportunities to, and then ship him out if they're not going to contend, which I don't think they're going to necessarily contend for a wild card spot. So I mean, I'm not as excited on Jim Johnson as Chuck may have wanted to get me. I know you wanted to get me riled up, Chuck, but that's.
Well, like I said, they hang in there, and I think they're that Marlins team of 2-3 years ago that hung around into the in the wild card race. You know, being 3-4-5 games back. Close enough that they feel like they need to try and win all the games that they possibly can. And I don't think they're going to end up selling off like a team like the White Sox has shown no incentive. They're basically trading off their assets. The Braves have been more quizzical in what they've done at times, in so much as they got a lot of young players back in the Shelby Miller trade, but then they acquired Matt Kemp. And they acquired Bartolo Colon. They made sure to, you know, they signed him as a free agent or what have you. So they are more on the fence. They believe their first year of their new stadium that they can at least be in the wild card race and help to add to the excitement of people coming to see the new ballpark. And I think people are not giving enough credence to that possibility. And everyone is bored out of their skull hearing me talk about Julio Teheran and how underrated I think he is on top of the other ones. I know I've heard a number of players. There's a whole group of starting pitchers that, you know, everyone has their theory on who they like within that group. And just beyond that group is a guy named Faltynewicz. Faulty, who I can imagine that Evan has had his fill of as far as wanting to rip his hair out, trying to figure out how a guy with that stuff can pitch so poorly. But there are people out there that think he's ready to turn the corner as well.
Yeah, with Faulty, it's getting better in the first inning. And I think what you said earlier about the Braves, they're not just going to roll over. I mean, they're opening the new stadium this year. They want to put a halfway decent product out there for the fans. And they don't want, you know, the season that they, you know, retire the Ted to be just one where, oh, we're, you know, fiddle-dicking around and we went out and won, you know, 67 games or something stupid like that. I think, you know, like you said, they're going to go out, they're going to compete until it all falls apart, the rotation sucks, and then they're going to ship off Jim Johnson. And trust Jim Johnson, nobody else. That's it.
Is it wrong for me to say I kind of like Jim Johnson?
How do you like a guy who only has a, what is it, 6.5 K per nine? You know, it's, I mean, I know is...
Because in really? The 20-team league that I own him in, he's going to get me a couple of saves.
That's a 20-team league. I mean, that's not, you know.
I mean, to be fair, like, that's the thing. He's going to be one of those waiver wire guys that you can pick up if you ever need saves for a week, like if you need just cheap saves. He's going to be there. And that's the thing. He'll still get you those cheap saves. Yeah, he's not going to give you a lot of other fantastic numbers, but his numbers, he did look like he had made some improvements as the season went on last year. And I do think that he'll be able to at least give you somewhat decent numbers before they trade him off for some prospect at the midseason point. And it's kind of like what you were saying, Evan. They do want to give the fans in the new ballpark, they want to give them something to look forward to. And they see that they have the ability to improve as they made improvements last year. They bring in Bartolo and R.A. Dickey so that they can help with the progression of the young pitchers that they have in their staff. You know, they'll be able to help Fultonevich. If they can't, then he's going to become a bullpen arm. They'll be able to help Teron. They'll be able to help the other guys that are still young that maybe haven't come up yet. You know, if like a Lucas Sims or anyone comes up, they'll be able to help with that. It really depends on what progressions they're able to have overall as a team. And then they'll be able to see where they made some strides in this year. But this is definitely a building block year for them, but one that has a lot of potential, I think.
Yeah, I'll put the over-under on 27 saves for Jim Johnson.
That's going to be under.
Wait, as a Brave or just overall?
It's still going to be under because he's not going to go anywhere and he's not going to close. If he went anywhere, he'd get maybe like three cheap saves. Like Brad Ziegler got a couple of cheap saves when Kimbrel went down. But there's no way that Jim Johnson gets more than 27 because that team is just not good enough to get him that many. You could see it being like the Phillies team last year in which Genmar Gomez had a ton of saves early on because they were in one-run games and they were winning them early in the season. You could see something of that nature. I don't really see that as being something more than fluky. So I think that the over-under is like 17.
I want to say that did he sign a 2-year deal or a 3-year deal towards the end of last season? I know it was at least two.
I believe it's two.
Well, that's not exactly a sign of a team that's expecting to try and, you know, just use somebody a little bit and then flip them.
Well, no, but it also allows him to be flipped because of the length of his contract that a team.
He's only signed through this year. Yeah, he's only signed through this year.
Oh, I'm pretty sure they signed him to an extension towards the end of last year that I thought was a 2-year deal. But even a re-signing of him is a statement that, you know, that they thought he had some value. I think he's a better pitcher than you guys are giving him credit for. Far better than Genmar Gomez.
I agree with that. I personally like Jim Johnson. I just don't know if the Braves overall have it to get that amount of saves with just Jim Johnson at the helm for potentially a half season. I could see him being there for longer. It makes it tough for me to say, oh, well, he's definitely going to be able to get 27. That's why I put it more closer to 17 for myself. Chuck, is there anything else that you want to add on any of the Braves before we move on to Evan's overrated team?
I'm just fine with us moving on. It's just curious. The only thing I would ask is if Evan wants to make a statement or two about if he thinks Freddie Freeman has more upside than he showed last year, I think that would be kind of interesting to know if a Braves fan feels like Freddie Freeman power could ascend even further, et cetera, and so forth.
More upside than 34 home runs? No way. I you know, would have never thought Freeman would crack 30, you know, when he was coming up, even though I do absolutely love his swing. But I think we've definitely seen the ceiling. And if you're expecting Freddie to go nuts and hit 40 or something stupid like that, I don't necessarily see that.
Okay. I was just curious. You see him every day, brother. So I thought I would ask.
I mean, he's man pretty, and he gives great hugs. Not that I would know personally, but that they look good on TV.
Have you been following him around again, Evan? Because we talked about this. You can't go follow Freddie Freeman around.
Performance-enhancing hugs. That's what I'm looking for. So, you know, I love Freddie though. I took him, you know, at the wheel of this third round dynasty draft that I'm doing just because I'm super high on him. So,
did you guys know, this is a random fact, that Jim Johnson was born in Johnson City?
That's craziness.
He's royalty. And that is a perfect segue to my overdrafted team. I don't think the Royals are going to be any good this year. I don't know if anybody's figured this out yet. But of the guys that were on their team last year that hit over 20 home runs, and there was only three of them, Kendrys Morales is gone. He was their home run leader. Eric Hosmer hit 25 last year. I don't necessarily know that I'm going to expect that to happen again. And Salvador Perez is usually pretty good for about 20 home runs. I mean, Jorge Soler going to come over and knock a few dongs. Hosmer scored 80 runs. That was max on the team. I think that's pretty disgusting and doesn't say a lot for what they have going on around there. So I think it's a whole lot of yuck going on. I'm kind of out on Lorenzo Cain. I think I would rather draft Odubel Herrera kind of at the area that he's going personally. And yeah, I'm just kind of out. Pitching is disgusting. Rest in peace, Yordano. But I'm not as hyped on Danny Duffy as everybody else seems to be. I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
Chuck, anything?
Well, I do. I have a natural tendency. Last year, I was leading the Danny Duffy train. In the middle of the season, I told everyone that if I could have a waiver wire pitcher that I had recently picked up that I thought was going to overachieve, it would be one of two guys, the aforementioned John Gray and Danny Duffy, which Duffy turned out to be great last year. But he still only has that one really solid stretch, and he's got a pretty marred health history. So there is some concerns there, even though he's a power lefty. I think he's going probably a little bit too high for my likings. As for the rest of the team, I think you're going to see, as an overview, you're going to see some people think that since most of their team is becoming a free agent, most of the value on their team will be a free agent the following year. So you're going to have a lot of people who, you know, buy into that free agent year, walk year kind of boost. And then you're going to get to people who say that, you know, this team is on the brink of selling these pieces off because there's just not enough talent in that starting rotation, which the starting rotation does seem pretty short. You know, you got to get a lot out of Kennedy. You got to get a lot out of Duffy to foresee that Jason Hamill, maybe being a fast starter helps a little bit, but it's hard to imagine that they're going to have enough to really be true contenders this year. And they've already shown a penchant for being willing to sell off people and look to the future if they don't think they can contend. So I'm mostly on the same line of thought as Evan is.
Yeah. I don't know. I hate the Royals. I don't know, man. There's just I can't get excited about the Royals. There's just not enough there for me to get excited about. Like, we talked about this in the staff chat earlier this week, in which Chuck was talking about Eric Hosmer and if he was going to be able to duplicate it or not. Like, even if he ends up being able to duplicate, I just don't see anyone else over there giving a ton of value. I mean, I have to expect that Salvador Perez is going to basically do the same thing, that Jorge Soler is just going to have a good season, Lorenzo Cain's going to be healthy. You know, it's just, there's a lot of ifs in that lineup that it's almost too difficult for me to be able to get behind. That if I didn't have any Royals on any of my teams, I wouldn't be disappointed at all.
You know what's funny, just real quick while I'm thinking about Salvador Perez, is you know that since 2011 when he started in the league, his home runs have gone up literally every year since, and literally every year since then, his WRC plus has gone down, except for last year when he magically bumped from an 86 to an 88. Good job, Sal. So I think this team is just really disgusting, and it makes me really uncomfortable that they won a World Series a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I'm still a bit bitter on that, so if we not talk about it, that'd be great.
Well, you guys don't even have the tie-in to all of the ex-Brewers that I have as far as, you know, their shortstop, as far as their manager, as far as Lorenzo Cain. I mean, all those guys used to be Brewers, as far as, you know, they flipped Jake Odorizzi. So there's been a ton of Brewer transfer over there because of the Zach Greinke trade. So, you know, I share kind of some negative feelings towards them. I thought it was a miracle how they put together their World Series team, and I give their organization a lot of credit for being creative and coming up with a way to be, you know, that competitive for that stretch. But I also always thought that they were playing with very small room for error. And, you know, I think the Wade Davis injury last year sort of hinted to that it's hard to count on your relievers for, you know, generally like 3 1/3 to 4 innings every single game and have that hold up as a strategy for the long term. And so I think you're seeing that they haven't gotten that much from their minor league system in recent years. I know their second baseman, Mondesi Jr., on paper anyway this year, is one of those guys that they're going to try and get some stuff from. But I don't see this as being an overly competitive team. And other than Kelvin Herrera, I like the draft values that I do like on this team is I do think Kelvin Herrera has been really solid, and the games they do win will be, you know, by only a couple runs. They're not going to blow out a lot of people. So I think he could have decent value since he seems to be going, you know, towards the back end of the top 10, towards the 13th or 14th closer overall sometimes. So I like him, and I'm willing to take a really late gamble on the power of Jorge Soler and hope that he gives me 30 home runs on the cheap. But in general, I have no disagreements with Evan's idea that the Royals are overdrafted.
Evan, anything else to add?
Nope, that's it.
I will agree with Chuck that I do think that Kelvin Herrera is going to be able to at least provide some decent value. Every one of the hitters I feel like I'm willing to stay away from, and it's never going to be that big of an issue. I own Eric Hosmer in a keeper league, and I like him. It's tough for me to still be able to support that he is going to be able to just do great, especially now that he lost Kendry Morales as his, I am totally blanking.
Friend?
No.
as his
protection in the lineup, basically. I feel that it's tough for me to be able to even support him. In terms of the starting pitchers, you know, I liked it up until they went to sign Jason Hamill this offseason, because I really thought Matt Stram was going to be able to come in and start this year, and I thought he was going to have some good value. But if he doesn't start this season, then his value doesn't really do anything for me as mid-relief pitchers. So they kind of cost themselves and fantasy owners a potential player there.
Well, we didn't talk about Mike Moustakas. He's the only one that I think, if he falls enough, the only one we haven't.
I knew
he's the only one we.
Baseman. I couldn't remember who the hell was. I kept thinking it was Cuthbert.
They used Chesler Cuthbert last year.
Yeah, I kept thinking it was Cuthbert.
And you know, Brandon Moss. You know, I will monitor some of these guys and see if I think they fall too far, because I think Moustakas was making some strides last year before he got hurt, and I think he wants to get paid next year. So, you know, I'll monitor him a little bit. But overall, I agree with Evan that, you know, a lot of these guys. I traded Brandon Moss in the league that I owned him in after he got traded to Kansas City. So he's got to fall quite a ways for me to be excited about him there.
All right. Guys, why don't we give our Twitter handles and tell our listeners what we are
working on. So, Evan?
At EasyEv3 on Twitter. I'll be poking the bear that is Ben Brennis and join our schoolyard fight out by the bike rack.
Since when do you bust my balls on Twitter?
Since about 5 minutes from now.
All right. I'll get into Twitter wars with you. I have no issues. Chuck, what about you?
I can always be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter. I've just been collecting data and working on my rankings and trying to throw an article here and there onto the website at Friends with Fantasy Benefits. So I'm getting ready for the start of the draft season within a couple days here. Will be the true start of the draft season when NFBC season kicks off for me.
And I can be reached at BBrennisFWFB. I guess you'll start seeing Evan and I have some Twitter wars. Apparently, that's what's going to happen. I'm going to win, obviously. I just want to say thank you.
Wrong.
What? You want to go right now? I just want to say thanks again to all of the listeners. We can always use rate and reviews, 5-star ratings. I still think that we may be looking to potentially fill some of our listener leagues. So if you take a screenshot or send that in an email to Friends with Fantasy Benefits on Twitter, then Justin will look to place you in one of our listener leagues. So until next time, guys, have a great baseball season, everyone.